fourth case today is Pruitt against McAdory. Ms. Winthrop.
May it please the court. I am Heather Winslow. I represent Ralph Pruitt, appellant in this matter, which comes before the court on appeal from the district court's erroneous denial of habeas relief. In 1992, Ralph Pruitt was sentenced to life without possibility of parole after a trial in which prospective jurors were excluded on the basis of their gender, and the prosecution withheld material exculpatory evidence which directly undermined the credibility of its key witness. Mr. Pruitt asked this court to reverse the judgment below and remand for the granting of habeas relief. The prosecution of Mr. Pruitt rested nearly entirely on the testimony of the state's key witness, the complaining witness, Naomi Sims. Despite this fact, the prosecution did not disclose to the defense before trial that Ms. Sims testified only after she was arrested, taken before a judge, admonished, and subjected to a $5,000 appearance bond. Unlike any of the other evidence in this case, that appearance bond, the fact of that appearance bond, and the procedures which surrounded it, went directly to Ms. Sims' credibility and her motivation for testifying. The district court agreed that the state court's analysis of this issue, of the Brady issue, was flawed. The state court rejected Mr. Pruitt's claims on appeal, on his post-conviction petition, in finding that because this wasn't necessarily a promise of leniency, it was not exculpatory. The district court agreed that that was an improper application of the Brady doctrine, and the respondent essentially concedes this point in their brief. Yet the district court erred in finding that the fact of this appearance bond was not material. In its analysis, the district court looked only to whether or not the appearance bond would instruct the jury that Ms. Sims had been at one time reluctant to testify. In fact, the true materiality of this appearance bond is in its impact on why she changed her mind and decided to testify. She did not come to court because, as she testified, she wanted to. She came to court because after this appearance bond was instituted, she knew, she had personal knowledge, that the prosecution was willing to subject her to legal proceedings to get her to testify in that case. She would not have come to testify had she not understood that the prosecution had an influence over her. That is the true materiality of this evidence, and that is facts, those are facts, which were not before the jury with any other evidence. Contrary to the district court's finding, this was not simply cumulative of facts which the jury already had. This information was further material, directly material, because it went to the heart of Ms. Sims' credibility, in that it showed that she was willing to mislead the jury. She was willing to get on the stand and not tell the whole truth. She distinctly and deliberately withheld this fact that she had been subjected to a $5,000 appearance bond in her testimony. When she was asked why was she there, she stated only because she wanted to be.
How extensive was the cross-examination regarding her credibility with regard to her drug use and other matters like that?
Your Honor, there was extensive cross-examination with respect to other issues, but those issues do not relate to her reason for testifying. The reason that she changed her mind after months of avoiding the police, after months of avoiding the prosecutors, why did Naomi Sims change her mind and decide to come to court to testify? Not because she wanted to, but because there was this $5,000 appearance bond.
So is it exculpatory evidence that a witness is testifying under subpoena? Now, that's all the appearance bond recognizes, that her appearance was involuntary and something bad was going to happen if you didn't testify. That's true every time a subpoena is issued. Something bad is going to happen if you thumb your nose at the court. So, as a general matter, is testifying under a subpoena exculpatory evidence?
As a general matter, that may not be, but that is not the situation in which we're having this case.
But look, isn't that the burden of your argument? All the $5,000 does is quantify the bad thing that's going to happen if you defy the subpoena. Whether the bad thing is $5,000 or a week in jail or the marshals tearing your house upside down looking for you, something bad is going to happen if you defy a subpoena. Why is it that $5,000 is different from the other bad things that might happen?
Your Honor, I'm quite correct that the $5,000 here is not the relevant point. The relevant point is that Ms. Sims was subjected to a legal proceeding. Ms. Sims now...
Yes, well, that's true of every subpoena. So my question is, do you have the courage of your conviction to argue that that the fact that somebody testifies under subpoena is exculpatory evidence? Now, maybe yes or maybe no, but that seems to me the question that we have to consider.
But, Your Honor, the circumstances in this case were different. Ms. Sims was taken before a judge and specifically admonished. That is a different procedure than merely being served with a subpoena and being on notice that you may be, sometime in the future, subject to a judicial and legal proceeding if you fail to appear and testify.
Was it true that, in your mind, when I asked why she testified, what was her response?
Because I want to.
You think that was incorrect?
Your Honor, I don't know, but the fact is that was not the whole truth. The fact is that we know that Naomi Sims did not want to testify until 3 days before this hearing, when she was taken before a judge, admonished, and subjected to this bond. In fact, she had actively avoided the police, avoided the prosecution, and refused to cooperate. That, in addition to the prior legal proceeding, makes this different than simply a case in which a witness is subpoenaed, or the case in which
a witness is being held as a material witness. He's actually in custody. Is that exculpatory?
Your Honor, I believe that would be exculpatory.
Any cases pro or con on that?
I was unable to find any cases on that specific
issue.
Okay,
thank you.
Had the jury known that the state's key witness, Naomi Sims, had previously refused to testify and changed her mind only after being taken before the judge, admonished, and subjected to this bond, it certainly would have changed the jury's impression of her and her testimony. For that reason, it was material and clearly exculpatory. The second issue is that the fact that the jury in this case was selected in violation of Batson versus Kentucky and JEB versus Alabama. This court specifically instructed in Coulter versus Gilmore that when a challenge of this kind is raised, the reviewing court must look to the totality of the circumstances, considering all factors, in determining whether or not strikes were motivated by impermissible discrimination, in this case, gender. In the district court's review of the transcript from the evidentiary hearing, the district court failed to consider the totality of the circumstances. The district court failed to consider whether or not seated female jurors were similarly situated, yet treated differently, from struck male veneer members. If the court has specific questions on that issue, I will address them. Otherwise, I would reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. Ms. Griffin.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Attorney General Colleen Griffin on behalf of the respondent. I'd like to briefly just address the Batson issue first. The petitioner cites this court's opinion in Coulter versus Gilmore because that is the only thing that the petitioner could find to perhaps get the court to reverse the district court. But one merely needs to read the district court's opinion to see that the district court did take into consideration the totality of the circumstances. In fact, the district court cites to the Coulter versus Gilmore decision and says that she must take into account the totality of the circumstances. The district court also undertook a very thorough analysis of the female jurors that were kept and looked at their characteristics as opposed to the male jurors that were excused. Besides for the fact that the district court did take into consideration the totality of the circumstances, all we are left with is an assessment of the credibility of the prosecutors in this case, which the district court specifically found that the prosecutors who testified appear sincere and honest as they explain their reasons for striking six male veneer members. So what we're left with is a factual determination by the district court that should not be reversed by this court unless it finds that the findings are manifestly erroneous. Again, the court took into consideration everything she was supposed to take into and found that the petitioner had failed to show pretext on the part of the prosecutors for their explanations for their peremptory challenges. Regarding the Brady issue, the petitioner claims that the sale to
Do you know whether there's any authority on the question whether being in prison as a material witness is exculpatory?
I believe that the district court opinion refers to the fact that the district court was unable to find any case that found that.
I'm asking what you found.
I found nothing that said that failure to disclose that the victim's appearing as a material witness is exculpatory or need even.
Anything about the subpoena question?
No. Or need even be disclosed to the prosecution, although the district court in this case did find that the prosecution probably should have disclosed it, as did the state court. And I'd like to point that out. The district court in this case never found that the trial court erred in its Brady determination or found a Brady violation. In fact, the district court specifically found that the court concludes that the appellate court's decision on this issue is not contrary to established federal law. The state court, as well as the district court in this case, found that the information probably should have been disclosed. However, the question was whether it was material to the defense, which is also something that need be shown under Brady, and it simply was not.
Who asked the question, why are you testifying?
I believe both parties, well, the one to which she answered, because I want to, the prosecutor asked that question, I believe.
Knowing that she was actually involuntary, or at least apparently involuntary.
Well, in the state court, what they were attempting to do was show that because she had been arrested, or I believe that they were more geared toward showing that she was not testifying because she was actually arrested on a misdemeanor prostitution charge. And I believe that where they were going with that question was to show that she wasn't in fact testifying to garner some kind of relief from the prostitution charge. I don't think it really occurred to them that maybe this material witness bond issue was even relevant to that question. And also, I don't believe that the $5,000 appearance material witness bond shows that particular answer was false. The petitioner talks a lot about the fact that, and I believe it is shown that she was sometimes trying to avoid the prosecution and the police officer in this case that were trying to get to her. She was a drug addicted prostitute. However, there was also testimony and evidence in the trial that many times the prosecution went out and they just couldn't find this woman. And that is exactly what a material witness bond is for, to have somebody show up in court that you're having trouble, show up in court, whether it be that you can't find them or whether it be that they're trying to avoid going to court. She could have wanted to avoid going to court, but then once she was there, wanted to testify against the petitioner. The testimony that I'm here because I want to is simply not shown to be false, and any suggestion that it is pure conjecture. Again, the state court noted that this material witness bond is totally different from a situation where you have a co-defendant testifying against his co-defendant so that he gets a reduction in sentence or charges dropped against him. This witness was getting nothing for her testimony in this case. She did not have to testify in any particular manner. She could have got up in court and said, no, the petitioner didn't rape me, or she could have got up and said, I don't remember a thing, and she would have been in total compliance with her material witness bond.
But on the prosecutor's view, she would have been committing perjury.
Perhaps, yes, if they could prove it. Well, if they could prove it. If she said he didn't rape her, then that's all the evidence they would have had except for her prior statements to police. I don't believe that that was part of the $5,000 imperial witness bond that she had to testify in any particular manner. So the district court found that the non-materiality finding of the appellate court was not inconsistent with the Brady standard and that therefore it was not contrary to established federal law. We believe that that finding is in compliance with the AEDPA standard and that we would ask that this court affirm the district court's finding on both issues. If there's no further questions, thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Winslow?
Briefly, with respect to the question of the jury selection claim and the district court's analysis of that claim, the district court did, in fact, cite to Coulter versus Gilmore. However, merely citing to that case is not sufficient when the district court didn't apply its reasoning and its instructions. In fact, the district court, reading the district court's decision thoroughly, the district court failed to compare female jurors or reasons given for seating female jurors to the reasons given for striking similarly situated male jurors. Looking specifically to Margaret Sullivan and Peter Gasperi, the two individuals were struck, Mr. Gasperi was struck because he lived in an affluent North Shore suburb, as did Ms. Sullivan. These are the types of discrepancies that the district court failed to address in simply looking to the individual reasons. Furthermore, the district court did find that at least on two occasions, the reasons given by the prosecutors for exercising their strikes were pretextual, those having to do with Mr. Carlson's intelligence and Mr. Giambarberi's dissatisfaction with the legal system. With respect to the Brady issue, Judge Easterbrook raises a very good point, which is that at the time that Ms. Sims testified, she would have realized that if she did not testify consistently with her prior police reports, she could in fact be subject to some kind of legal proceedings for inconsistent testimony. These are questions that the jury should have been able to consider and would have been able to consider had it known that Ms. Sims would not have testified were it not for this $5,000 appearance bond. It goes directly to the heart of the relevance and the materiality of this appearance bond. For this reason, the district court erroneously found that the state court's decision was not contrary to established federal law, but the district court did agree that the state court's decision was contrary in finding that the evidence was not exculpatory. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.